From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 19th day of June, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. And if you can stick around for the second half hour today on our home station, you'll hear Mike again on yesterday afternoon's recording of Commodity Week, along with Dale Durkles and Elaine Cubb. It was a great show, and it's up online right now. Now, in fact, at willag.org, willag.org, and you can hear it all day on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I took another walk in the woods, and here's just a bit more of that natural sound for some calm and peace. In Chicago today, July corn up a penny and a half at $3.32 and a half for Friday. December, $3.45 and a quarter, two and a half higher. And March corn up 2 3/4 today at $3.56 and 3/4. July soybeans, 3 1/2 higher, $8.76 and a half the settlement price. November at $8.80 and 3/4 up 4 3/4. And January up a nickel at $8.80. 4 1/4. Next year's July beans at $8.85 and a quarter, 3 higher. Bean oil up 46 cents. The bean meal down $1.80. Wheat futures July contract soft red down 2 1/4 at $4.81 1/4. The hard red at July at $4.28 1/4, down 0.25 cents. Live cattle futures June contract down $1.37 1/2 at $94.70. Feeders at $132.55, down 42.5 cents. And lean hogs for the day at $48.45, down $1.45. Crude oil up 72 cents a barrel. Ethanol futures up about a penny at $1.24. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.20 1/2, 0.7 cents. Higher gasoline up 9 2/10 at $1.26 6/10. Mike Zuzlo at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to take a look at what happened in Chicago and the marketplace for the day. Hey, good to have you back on the show again this Friday, Mike.
Great to be with you, Todd. And hey, happy Father's Day to you and all those great dads out there listening.
Hey, thank you so very much. And the same to you, too. I know that you work hard to take care of your family there in Atchison. I want to know about those farmers who have been working hard across the Midwest, putting a crop in the ground. How far along do you think they really have gotten, meaning how many acres did they not plant and what might show up in the acreage report?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably 1.5 million that could go to something else other than corn and beans. And then there's probably some acreage mixing that we need to do in terms of pulling down the corn and bringing up the beans. And I feel like we've got some of that dialed in already. Not a lot. I think we've got some of it dialed in, but the trade's really been focused upon the ending stocks. More the U.S. ending stocks than the global ending stocks, in fact. And so I think that if we're going to go into the acreage and stocks report with any kind of a really big surprise, with the bean corn new crop ratio still trading up there around that record high for the contract of 2.6 for the new crop, maybe that's what will create the unwinding of the spread and unwinding of the ratio. And many would have said up until the middle of this week that, well, that's not likely given the fact that U.S. and China are going to come back online and China's going to buy a lot more beans of ours. I think even at the end of this week, the rumor mill has it that the Chinese are actually looking at more wheat and corn and maybe ethanol than they've locked in plenty of beans and locked in plenty of pork at this point. So maybe the tables will turn a little bit in favor of the feed grains. And that, I think, then in turn could help support the soybeans, especially if we get into a weather market next week ahead of the acreage and stocks report, which I certainly hope we get, because I'd like to have some supply fear going into that market so that the USDA supply bear is a little bit more on notice.
Given all the information you gave me, there was still a lift in the soybean market today. Why was that the case?
I think the majority of it is the Lighthizer comments we got in the middle of the week that they were going to still keep up with phase one. And many people in Chicago, and I don't argue this point, I just think it's mostly baked into the price until we see more old crop sales to China. many people telling me how forward sold the Brazilians are. And I've got one colleague in Argentina, Brazil, telling me that they're over 90% sold at this point. I haven't been able to confirm that with any other data. I think it's probably closer to the 80% level, if I had to guess. So, I mean, they're advanced sales for sure. But I think that's probably anecdotally showing us that the Chinese have stockpiled beans as well.
Advanced sales, those are generally thought to be farmer sales. Does that really translate into the export market all the time?
Not Brazil, that is? Right. Now, that's a really good point. Not necessarily, but they have, you know, the cargoes that China took on in April and May from Brazil would support those big farmer-related sales.
This is a little bit early for the Chinese to be in the U.S. market. Usually takes another month or so, I think. So there must be something afoot, right? I mean, normally normally there isn't much of a normal, but prior to the battle between the United States and China over trade, normally they would come in August, September, October, and buy through what, about December or so, I would think.
Yes, that's exactly right. I think, Todd, what you bring up is a really big medium-term point that's really important for the radio listener and the web listener for the marketing side of the equation. If you're looking at making a profitable sale, you know, it's really about profit per acre. You're getting very, very close in the soybeans. And what I'm trying to suggest to clients and subscribers right now is that if you have a rally in the beans and that rally keeps on going, then we've either been able to sidestep a resurgence in COVID and or we've been able to stay on track with the U.S.-China trade negotiations in phase one. And that $40 to $50 billion of ag goods is still possible to be grabbed a hold of by the U.S. farmer. And so if that's the case, if I sell beans at a profitable level and I wait on corn, and then I can get corn to a profitable sales level and get better than $600 or $650 an acre, I'll call that a true victory in this kind of a market when we've gone through this pandemic. So I think that's really the logic behind why I like hedging beans more, because of where we're at in terms of price action, what we probably already priced in terms of bullish fundamentals. And I'm sorry, but I hate to admit that the research I've done would suggest that I think the Chinese government probably does not want President Trump to have a second term. So I'm not on board with this idea that it's all going to be holding hands between the two countries between now and November. I think it's going to be quite a bit more rocky.
You know, Lighthizer, of course, in front of Congress, as you mentioned this week, talking about phase one, they saying that he thought that they would get close, which I thought was an interesting term. And he still, you know, kind of not saying exactly what they would buy, of course, and handing that off. The producers really have to take everything with a grain of salt, except for, I suppose, the weather at this time.
No, I think you're absolutely right, because one thing that happened this week that we're really not talking about is China did loosen monetary policy. And that means they're still going to try and export their way out of their problems economically. And why wouldn't they? Every other emerging and developing world country is doing that as well. But if you take a look at that and then you put together the fact that we're now global debt-wise, developed economies are now up to World War II level debt, and emerging economies are the highest ever, and we've gone above the 1980s as far as global debt in emerging or developing economies. We are really running and pushing on a string here to generate organic natural demand. It's been mostly fiscally and monetarily led ever since 2008. That concerns me, and that makes me think that the Chinese are going to continue to keep their currency weak. That is not an increase in buying power for our goods. And I think you got to keep that in mind. I think you're absolutely right.
Anything else that we should talk about, whether that be livestock or outside markets that you've already discussed? Yes, sir. What are they?
Livestock. I think the cattle on feed report could be a watershed a report for the cattle. You know, we're trading about $10 below the cash prices of 105, 106. going into the cattle on feed report, placements anywhere from 81 to 102. It's going to be really important to watch those placements numbers and see if the feeders don't find a low. And that then ignites the fat cattle futures because the funds have been short the cattle and have been short the corn. So watching both of those commodities for fund short covering.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo, globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, biofuels could be in better shape in a new coronavirus aid package. That, according to the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee. But other problems for the industry remain. Colin Peterson, a congressman from Minnesota, told a virtual Congressional Biofuels Caucus town hall that he's pretty confident the relief not in the original CARES Act, but now in the House-passed HEROES Act, will be in any deal struck with the Senate.
So it'll be 45 cents a gallon on your, I think it's 3 months production, or you can use something from a year ago if that's better. And I think whatever ends up happening with this next stimulus bill or whatever you want to call it, I think the ag stuff will be pretty close to what we put in this bill that we passed out a couple weeks ago in the House.
That includes help for commodities, says Minnesota's Representative Peterson.
There'll be some help for the hog producers and turkeys and chickens and others that have been hurt by the plant shutting down and the markets shifting and all that sort of thing.
Colin Peterson says the Senate Ag Chair, Pat Roberts of Kansas, supports most of the House Ag help, but for biofuels, it's about more than a new bill. The National Corn Growers Association CEO, John Doggett, says the EPA has granted 85 small oil refinery ethanol waivers over 3 years, worth some 4 billion gallons of lost demand.
If you took that 4 billion gallons and converted it into corn grind, that's nearly half of what we're projecting our carryover to be by this fall. And that's significant.
And the EPA continues to delay implementing a federal court ruling against most of the waivers.
EPA is delaying applying this court decision to effectively shut down waivers until after the November elections. This is scaring us to death.
NCGA's Doggett and other industry officials see the waivers as the single most important issue facing biofuels right now, with 28 more exemptions, including some to get around the court ruling, under active consideration. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. On this Friday afternoon, let's check the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions. Hey, good afternoon to you, Eric. Hope you're having a great day.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a lot different than earlier this week, though, with this humidity coming back in finally.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, but I want to start out in the Central Plains area because they have some interesting weather forecast coming up. They've had some really, I think, kind of rough weather, maybe, over the last several days or so, or maybe a week, and not in terms of thunderstorms. But can you give me kind of an idea what's happened there and what might be coming our way?
Yeah, you know, I was looking back over the last month, actually, at how fast the wind speeds were across the Central Plains of the United States. And because those winds were coming out of the southwest, they were very dry. But the wind speeds averaged, the daily average was up to 10 miles an hour faster than normal. So when you put that all together, they've had some major wind stress, they've had some very high heat, and their evaporation rates at times have been as high as 3.5 to 4.5 inches per week. So we had a problem in the Central Plains of very rapidly expanding what we call flash drought, and that really moved all the way from Texas and New Mexico clear up to North Dakota before some rains did finally come in, but as a result of this, over parts of the desert southwest, you should see the fires. In fact, some of the haze that we have over us today in Illinois, above some of the puffy cumulus clouds, that's actually smoke from the southwestern United States.
Wow, that's something else. What does it mean here, anything in the coming days, or what just does the weather look like for our part of the world?
Well, we've been quite dry around here as well, and it's been dry for almost about 10-plus days. So the problem is that this front that's moving through the plains today, so it got parts of the Dakotas, it got Minnesota, it's getting Iowa, it got all the way down to Nebraska and Kansas, and the tail end of it's trying to cut through parts of Oklahoma. Well, that front, unlike what it does in spring, fall, and winter, it's not moving fast. We could practically call it stationary. So all that rain's going to try to stay out there. Now, out ahead of it, we here in the central and eastern Corn Belt could get a few shots at some thunderstorms early in the weekend, maybe tomorrow night, for example, on Saturday night. But we may have to wait here in the eastern part of the Corn Belt until the next system rolls through middle of next week to come through and give us a better shot against some thunderstorms. The problem is that while some folks may get a little bit heavier rain right around here from some of the thunderstorms, I think, you know, what's a half inch to us? We need a little bit more than that. We need a few days of that. And I just don't think that this is the kind of rainfall event that will erase all worries of drought as we get to the end here of June. So it's good, but if I could dial up better, I would.
Will we have places that miss it, and what happens then?
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm going to watch most carefully is how much rain actually does fall in parts of Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, because that is an area that, should these rains not really just buy them time, what's going to end up happening is I think the drought could expand there pretty quickly again. Now, in the eastern Corn Belt, Indiana already in the latest drought monitor showed up with the first stage of droughts. We call that D0 drought because they've even been drier than we have. So we need this rain to come in. About the only saving grace in all of this is that, to be honest, we have not had too much in the way of heat to make our problem worse than it has been as of late with some of this precipitation or the lack of precipitation. So it's going to be a critical next 10 days. I think the good news is nothing's really shutting down the Gulf of Mexico in the longer term. So my big picture worries are still held at bay a little bit. I'm not going overboard yet, getting too worried about July and beyond.
Yeah, I did see that drought monitor that came out and showed Indiana in beginning stages of drought. It was pretty unique looking just as a map, because it almost appeared as if they decided to color Indiana in and nothing else. Do you know why that happened?
Yeah. Well, the last few systems that kind of rolled through the United States, as they went over Indiana, the timing was bad. So if the front doesn't pass through when you got good instability in the day, you don't get the thunderstorms. Then remember, Cristobal was west. It hit parts of Missouri, parts of western Illinois, then Iowa. So they didn't get anything from Cristobal. So they just got missed east, they got missed west, and now there's a little donut hole in the middle. We call that Indiana. So, yeah, they're dry.
We're in the last third of the month of June. Do you have any preliminary data or ideas about what July will look like?
We do have an idea, and I do believe that July, kind of like these days we're having here at the end of this weekend, is going to be much like this. I have no idea that July is not going to be warm. We've noticed the jet stream moving north. The good news is that the jet stream's not slowing down. It's just going north. And as it goes north and stays fast, we still tend to get good thunderstorm activity, good tropical flow out of the Gulf of Mexico, and as a result, good thunderstorm activity. And I think right now the call for July is going to be one where it's going to be warm, but more than likely wet too, which could paint a good picture for us.
I'm going to ask you to get just a bit political at the moment. Not really, but it's related, because I want to know, or try to get an idea of why China would be in to the U.S. marketplace other than phase one. What are conditions like on the ground in their part of the world? Because they're, of course, in the northern hemisphere and are running on the same season as we are, meaning they're in the middle of their growing season right now.
Yeah, so in and around, so when you think about China, we try to find Beijing, and then we go to the west of Beijing, to the south of Beijing, and then you go north of the Korean Peninsula. That's where they have their most productive farm ground. Now, there's no worries north of the Korean Peninsula right now, but there's been some patchy drought around Beijing. Now, get just a hair south of there, and they are sitting on what's called the Mayu Front. That's what they call it. It's a stationary boundary. It's almost like a monsoonal type setup, and it has been super wet, and it's going to continue to be there in the forecast. So if you were to drive north to south, just go to Beijing and drive south, you're going to go from some pretty dry land all of a sudden into just all-out flooding. So they are not having, you know, kind of the picture-perfect start to their growing season either.
How about Ukraine?
Well, in Ukraine, if you go west, so get close to the Black Sea and go west, they've had good rainfall. And I looked at some surface soil moisture data, and it looks fine. But as we look out longer and go into the future, it looks as though northern and eastern Ukraine, getting into the Russian wheat belt, does not. And there are places in there that are dry and are forecast to be dry. So to be honest, it's kind of hard to look across the whole of the northern hemisphere and find a big garden spot at this point. It doesn't mean one can't form, but there's problems in a lot of places, and I think it gives us a lot to talk about every Friday.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, and we'll talk with you again next Friday.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Listen to us on demand online at WILLAG.org or find us as a podcast in your favorite podcast applications. Up next, our recording of Commodity Week from yesterday afternoon.
Support for WILL comes from the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership, sponsor of the three-part risk management webinar series on June 18th, 25th, and July 2nd. Notable keynote speakers will be featured. More details at ilsustainableag.org.
Each week, we try to take a bit of an in-depth look at what happened in the world of agriculture. This week, our panelists for our Commodity Week program included Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles out of Bloomington, Illinois, along with Elaine Cub from ElaineCub.com out of Ipswich, South Dakota, and from Atchison, Kansas, Mike Zuzulo joined us as well from GlobalAnalytics.biz. I started by asking each of them just exactly what they'd like to talk about for the day.
Two things are really on my mind right now. One of them is China and what we're going to see as far as business out of China. And I guess the other one in the mix in here is kind of a combination of crop conditions and weather around the Midwest.
Elaine Cub from ElaineCub.com.
Well, I know that we are all sick and tired of talking about coronavirus, but I think it's interesting to look at how ethanol production is recovering and how that's really an indicator of really the only economic indicator that is affecting our grain markets at the moment.
And Mike Zuzulo.
Probably the biggest things are the spreads right now, Todd. The wheat-corn spread, the bean-wheat spread, and the cattle-hog spreads, all very, very active here in the last few weeks.
Why don't you explain what you mean to me, please?
Well, that would take a whole half-hour program, but I think, generally speaking, we saw on Thursday's trade a real headline news trade across the board. We had seen the Chinese Commerce Ministry release 10,000 tons of pork. They said more could come if they needed it. This really offset a very strong weekly export sales number for the pork side of the equation. And so the headline trade was trading instead of the fundamentals. Same with the weather in the corn versus the wheat. The corn market is very nervous, rightfully so, of a very big miss in the rain systems that are being projected. I would say this is a $1.5 billion rain because I think you could trim the national yield 5 bushels from what USDA is at if we don't get these promised rains over the next 10 days. So the trade naturally took the route of buying corn and selling wheat. And they naturally took that route as well because Russia said they're not going to be looking at doing any kind of export limitation of the wheat market. Beans are hemmed in by the wheat. They're up towards their April highs, but we can't seem to get above that. And I think it's because of the wheat market, because of the currencies, especially the fact that the Brazilian real is starting to go down against the dollar and make new weekly lows or try to make new weekly lows on Thursday's trade as well. So I think for the first time in a while, you can see more of a clear picture. The pond isn't muddy. It's kind of got a clear look to it as far as what the trade is trading while we wait for more news on these more important issues.
Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, joined us on our Thursday recording of Commodity Week. You can hear the whole of that program online right now or over the weekend on many of these radio stations. Look for it at WILLAG.org. Our other panelists included Elaine Cub of ElaineCub.com out of Ipswich, South Dakota, and Dale Durkles from Bloomington, Illinois, and Grain Cycles.